Accessing library computer data.
The world doesn't always adhere to logic. And sometimes when you're lost, you're found.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the show. We're continuing our run through of Discovery. We're up to season one, episode 13. It's called What's Past is Prologue, which sounds vaguely familiar to a DS9 Season 1 episode, but it's a little bit different. It was written by Ted Sullivan, directed by Olatunde Osun-Sanmi, and it aired yesterday, which would have been, what was that, January 28th, 2018. In this episode, Lorca plans to move forward with a coup against the Emperor, propelling Burnham to make a quick decision to save not only herself, but the USS Discovery. Clay, welcome back. We're here to talk about the 13th episode of Season 1 of Star Trek Discovery. How are you?
Oh, man, I'm so glad we spent all that time just building up that great Lorca turn. I can't wait to see what happens with him next week, right?
did your DVR recording cut out in the last 5 minutes or something? You're unaware.
What? What are you talking about? Did they jettison another season-long plot arc into hyperspace? Like the person flying that transport in the second episode.
Yeah, like the make them fly, like in the Game of Thrones thing, where the whatever that character that we barely ever see, where they throw people out of the very high prison and they land. Yeah. All right. Well, anyway, let's get going here. We're going to be talking about Discovery's 13th episode, What's Past is Prologue. That's a yet another Shakespeare reference. Is What's Past is Prologue. Which maybe we'll have something to talk about when we get to that. But we're going to play an audio clip. Me and Clay are going to come back, and we're going to break down What's Past is Prologue.
Hello, Michael. Judging from your communications hack, you're somewhere on the third deck. Where precisely, I can't tell. But no matter. I'm not going to hunt you down. I'll wait for you to come to me.
What makes you think I'd do that?
Because you belong here.
With you?
In the real world. I know that's hard for you to see right now. Because you're blinded by your emotions.
The only thing I was blinded by was you.
I know you understand that I had to lie to you, Michael.
To get home. Just like you know that the Federation is a social experiment doomed to failure. Childish idealism. Every species, every choice, every opinion is not equal. No matter how much they want it to be, the strong and the capable will always rise. Like you. And me.
All right, Clay, we both sound a little bit tired there, I think, but we've been watching this Star Trek Discovery. We have to pump it up. I will say this was a beautifully shot episode. The director has a way with light, I think, and he actually did something. I noticed the direction. I noticed the shots. I noticed the maybe not special effects, but I noticed there's some new kind of techniques that I saw directorial-wise. And I thought the episode looked really good. The further we move into Discovery, the more I'm settling into how the show looks on its own, on its face value. And I think it looks pretty good at this point. I don't really, I don't really care for its portrayal of space in a lot of sense. Like everything that happens outside of the ship, I don't really like the way that it looks. But I like the interior. I like the uniforms. And I'm starting to pick up on the way that the direction is happening with the lights and stuff. Although I don't know if the light is just a very Goodyear fantasy whimsical thing where the mirror universe for some reason has yellow light coming through all the windows all the time. But I don't know. I wanted to get that out of the way because I do have positives about the episode. Although I will say, moving into it, that this was the first episode in a while that actually made me a little bit angry as I was watching it. So it's not all... it's not all happiness and fluffiness and all that stuff. But anyway, what do you want to talk about with What's Past this prologue?
Yeah, I will agree with you that it looked good. I think Past is Prologue is a really good title for this because I feel like that sort of sums up kind of what I said last week or the week before, I can't remember, about how every episode just seems to be only there to become a piece of the Last Time on Discovery montage. And again, that's just what this feels like. What the hell are we doing?
What are we doing here is a good question.
Can you tell me? I understand that it's a serialized story, but can you tell me what that story is?
No. And I thought that a good place to break this down to start with, right, is to let's go beat by beat through the Lorca story here.
I would just like to say that this show, I said this on Twitter, is like when you're talking to a little kid and a kid is telling you a story and he just keeps going, and then, and then, and then, and then, and then, and none of the things he's saying seem to really, you know, match up, and the plots, and he doesn't really keep track of anything, and then all of a sudden he forgets things are happening and decides he doesn't want to do that anymore.
Can't tell where he's going. Like. Yeah.
Yeah. It could, like, when they, at the end of the episode, when they ended up 9 months in the future and the Klingons had won the war, I didn't even have any words. I was like, what?
I think we have to pat ourselves a little bit on the back. We were right that they did not jump back to the same time as the timeline they left. However,
I did get excited because when he said we overshot it by 9 months, I thought he meant in the past. So I thought that would have brought them back to the Battle of the Binary Stars.
Yes, which... yes. I thought we were going to be rebuilding everything that led to it. I was like, all right, we were dead on with our prediction.
Right, right.
And it's not. They went the other way. They made it a time jump that's relatively insignificant in the scheme of things, which we'll get to, I guess. But
yeah, let's go. We can go through the Lorca thing. Yeah.
I want to talk about Lorca here because what I think is happening with people who like this show and my inability to criticize the show in what seems to be a manner that people understand what I'm talking about, why I don't like it. I think that there's this debate tactic that people have started referring to where people like Ben Shapiro use it, where it's a very my father-in-law uses it too. It's a very lawyerly way to debate someone, which is to, if you're having a disagreement, you basically overwhelm the other person with facts and things like that. You pile on and pile on the facts that are disparate and sort of different, even if you're not proving your overall general point, just to cause the other people to either get confused or to get them in a gotcha moment where
right.
they will contradict themselves.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the problem with Discovery is that when you're watching it and if you're not paying attention, it all seems like it's moving of a piece.
Right.
When you sit down and you think about what exactly happened here, everything kind of falls apart, in my opinion. Like, nothing makes sense with anything that's going on here. So I thought that we'd break apart the Lorca strand piece by piece to see where sort of things come across and where there's confusion. And I think that it'll be indicative of the quality of the show because I think that every storyline is just like the Lorca storyline. They're just piled up and so much stuff is happening to you that you can't really remember it all to when you're trying to remember why things went wrong. So we'll start off with Lorca, right? There are two Lorcas. There's our prime Lorca and there's a mirror universe Lorca. Do you disagree with that at the very start of the series? Even before the opening of this show?
Yes, yes.
Okay, so mirror universe Lorca is trying to coup the mirror emperor. And he is down on a planet negotiating with some people that he wants to join his side. And the emperor's ship attacks him and it shoots him. And that's what he talked about in this episode. When he's beaming back, he beams up in an ion storm, and this is exactly what happened in the Mirror Mirror TOS episode that caused Kirk to go into the mirror universe. So it's a callback to that. He gets turned into the prime universe. I'm assuming that the prime Lorca moves to the mirror universe and dies on the Baran ship that blows up because the Emperor is attacking it. Do you disagree with any of this so far?
No. the fate of the prime Lorca, I hadn't really pinned down, but yeah, if you're playing by the rules of what they've done in the show so far, that makes sense, yeah.
Because everyone in the mirror universe thinks that he's dead, so I assume that the Emperor destroyed his ship, and he didn't think that he was on it. So, mirror universe Lorca is the only Lorca that still exists. Prime Lorca is dead. Mirror universe Lorca is in our universe. He, at the Battle of the Bulge, blows up his ship.
I mean, the Battle of the Binary Stars.
He
went way back.
It's difficult to land in the same timeline. He fought some Nazis.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So he at the Battle of the Binary Stars, he blows up his ship and he kills all of his crew members on it, right? My only understanding of why he would do this is because he wants to get command of the Discovery. Is there any other reason that he would do that to his own ship?
No. I mean, unless... Yeah, I mean, I guess at this point, we can't look at that at anything other than a sinister action, right?
Right. Unless the crew figured, we don't know any of this. This is all speculation. Unless his crew figured something out and he did it to stop them from stopping his plan, which at that point was so in its infancy that I can't even understand how he would have had a plan at that point. So
yeah, I have no idea. I mean, if he just assuming that he's yes, well, I guess it depends on when he. Are we assuming that he crosses into the prime timeline at the Battle of the Binary Stars? Is that the assumption?
I'm assuming it's before that, yes. Like, I don't know if it's exactly at that point, but it can't be too far off of that.
Yeah.
I don't think.
I don't understand why purposely blowing up his ship or blowing up his crew would get him on the Discovery.
Well, he knows that Mirror Universe, being from the Mirror Universe, knows that Discovery has a spore drive because Stamets.
I get that point, but I mean, in terms of practicality, how
it's a shot in the dark. I'd agree with that.
Directly get him onto the Discovery? I'm not really sure. But
yes,
whatever.
I'm just saying that's the only reason I can really come up with as to why he would do that. So
right,
he gets on the Discovery because he knows that the spore drive is on the Discovery because his Mirror Universe has a spore drive.
Mm-hmm.
He then recruits Burnham. Why does he recruit Burnham?
Because he likes her.
He likes the mirror. He likes
sexually.
He likes the mirror universe version of Burnham, right? Is there really anything else going on besides the fact that he's like, hey, in the mirror universe, I was good friends with this person, therefore, maybe I'll be good friends with this person?
I think it's implied, or maybe it's said, because they do say all of the implications out loud in this show. That he used her as a distractionary tool for when they went back to the mirror universe because he knew that Georgiou seeing her would, you know,
okay,
make her become distracted or something.
Right. It would trigger her. So Lorca's got Burnham. He's got the spore drive. He does a whole bunch of jumps. He does a lot of stuff in the prime universe to either save face or save the war. You know, he goes and fights Klingons and stuff. He's very excited to get back to the universe. He, even though the Mirror Universe Stamets was not using the spore drive for this purpose, he believes that the Discovery will be able to get him back to the Mirror Universe using the spore drive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, why does Mirror Lorca know that the spore drive can do this?
He doesn't. Because what they're using in the Mirror Universe spore drive is as an energy source. They say that in this episode.
So I guess my question then would be like, what is putting him on the drive to get the spore drive if he doesn't even know that that's a way to get back?
Right. I'm certainly not defending it. I'm really just kind of pointing out the problems along the path.
I'm not trying to argue with you.
But. Yep. And then he uses the spore drive to get back to the Mirror Universe. He attempts a coup against Georgiou. And then in the course of this episode, Burnham says to him, you know, you could have just asked us to send you back here. And my thing was, I was so sure that the show must have a reason why he needed Discovery to go back there. I was blown away when I realized there was no reason for him to take Discovery back with him. There's no, mm-hmm. He's not using the ship as a weapon. He's not using the ship in any sort of tactical sense. He's not doing it to, all he needed was Burnham to go back, if that's the ultimate plan. And what was Lorca's whole point of doing all of this? He didn't gain any advantage. All he wanted to do was just get back. And the writing is so bad that he doesn't even go back to his universe with an advantage that he's gained from the prime universe? What's the point of all that?
I have no idea. Like, I was I was really frustrated watching this episode because what they're showing you on the screen is an evil Lorca leading a group of soldiers or whatever up against Georgiou, and Burnham is helping Georgiou. But I couldn't figure out, like, who is supposed to be the bad guy here?
Yeah.
Like, because Lorca is clearly a bad guy, but Georgiou...
I like Lorca more than Georgiou as a viewer.
Yeah.
You know?
And Georgiou is set up for three episodes as this awful emperor.
Yes, this is an empire built on murder, race, subjugation, and cannibalism, basically.
Yeah, I mean, the first thing we see her do, well, I should
not
say...
Not cannibalism, but eating other species, yeah.
I should say the only thing we see her do is bomb the shit out of the rebels. So, mm-hmm. I mean, she's not a nice person.
Yep.
But as soon as she starts talking to Burnham, it's like that shit doesn't even matter. And it's just... like I was watching this whole thing going like, I don't understand... what Burnham is even doing here at this point?
What's her character drive, you mean?
Yeah. I guess at a certain point I said, well, why don't they just fucking beam her out of there? But I guess she needed to be there so she could like disable something in the throne room or whatever, sure. But it was just like I couldn't figure out what the stakes were here. Like the only stakes let me rephrase that. I know what the stakes were because they were completely unrelatable. Because the stakes were, the spore drive's going to blow up and destroy all known universes at the same time.
Yes.
It's like, what the, you can't, who cares? Like, you're building yourself up as this, like, character-based show with all these character-based plot points and all this kind of shit. And the best thing you can give me for this scenario is that, we got to disengage the shields on their engine, otherwise there's a total protonic reversal and everything they cross the streams basically,
which can't happen because this series exists in a franchise that knows that that's not
exactly
going to happen
exactly, yeah. And it's like I didn't know, and then she saves George Zhao at the end. I don't know. Nothing about this made narrative sense. I shouldn't say narrative because it had a beginning, a middle, and an end for the most part. But it's just like structurally, it just storytelling wise, none of this mattered to me.
Yeah.
And it didn't make, I don't want to say it didn't make sense, but it kind
of
didn't.
It makes the flimsiest amount of sense. It makes sense on a level if you're not really paying attention to it. You're like, okay, I guess I kind of buy this. And the pace is so fast that you don't have time to think about it while it's happening.
It's almost like you're watching, it's almost like it's being presented to you through Burnham's eyes, in that Lorca is presented as like evil, evil, evil. George Zhao is presented as not really bad, kind of good. And
she could be
like
redeemed.
This,
yeah, she could be redeemed.
Yeah. But like if you take, and that's all you're kind of going on is these like, again, note card summations of what's supposed to be happening. But then if you take a step back, you're like, how did we get to this point? Why are we here? And again, you've wrapped up a plot thread you've been laying pieces out for the entire season in a manner that, but at the end of it, you go, well, what the fuck was the point of all that?
Yeah. Yeah.
And I mean, you know, I'm sure Ash is going to come back at some point because they're going back into Klingon shit or whatever. Just the same way the Admiral came back, even though she seemingly thought she was dead. But this show, but like Lorca, there's no getting around. Like Lorca is dead, right?
Yes,
he's
unless
dead.
They both versions
go out of
Lorca.
Their way.
Yeah,
they go out of their way to show you him being dissolved by a star, basically. Unless they pull a fast one and it's like, well, he actually was transported into another, back into the, some shit like that.
Yeah.
But for all intents and purposes, Lorca is dead, and I don't know why anything that we've done to this point has mattered at all.
This was shocking to me. It's shocking to me that, A, Lorca's actions in the Prime Universe did nothing for his coup attempt in the Mirror Universe. And our whole sojourn into the Mirror Universe has done nothing to help us with the Klingon War in the Prime Universe.
Right. Yeah.
It's, every step of the way has just been killing time. Killing time in this incredibly pointless, why are we here doing... Like, you don't realize it's pointless until it wraps up and you're like, is that it? Like, that's all they came here to do and we're already being sent back. I underestimated myself again. I thought they were surely going to be in the Mirror Universe until the end of this season, mm-hmm. and they just
off by one episode, I think.
Yeah, you we have two left, I think, and so you're one early. But yeah, it's just crazy to me that we're just going to go back to the Klingon stuff and wrap that up for what it's worth. And I'm sure we'll not learn anything from all of that. But yeah, it's a very every step of the way has just been frustrating. And Burnham's arc, like, let's break down Burnham's arc, except quicker than we did Lorca's. Mm-hmm. Burnham is a Vulcan officer, a human raised by Vulcans, comes to Starfleet, gets a mentor in Zherjal. She commits mutiny because she does an act that she thinks is the right thing to do to stop a war. It ends up triggering the war, and she's imprisoned. Mirror Lorca frees her and brings her back. She then loses all story momentum at that point. There's nothing pushing Burnham going forward at that point. The only thing that you can say about Burnham at this point is that she has like a cold resolve. You know, she's like, no, we have to do it this way. And there's no good reason why she thinks that. And her Vulcan logic stuff is no longer a problem. Not even in the mirror universe are they going to bring this up. Like, her whole conflict of being half Vulcan, half human, or human raised by Vulcans is not a problem.
Right.
The only thing she does is to exist so that people watching this can say she reflects the Federation's values. And we have no sense from this series what the Federation stands for, except for Zherjal in the mirror universe constantly throwing shade at the Federation, even though we've never seen the Federation in this series up until this point.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know what to tell you. She's... I don't know why they made her a Klingon at all at this point. I'm sorry, Vulcan.
Yeah.
And at this point, you know, on Twitter, I also said, I saw somebody tweet, after this episode, something to the effect of like, so on board, I'm so ready for Mira Jujau's redemption arc. And I was like, what the f-? It was a perfect distillation of what the problem I have with this show is, because like that reaction is a reaction that's just like built into people based on the thing that's being presented to them. Excuse me. It's not something that actually makes sense or has been worked towards, because like redemption from what? We don't know anything about her.
Yes.
What is Burnham's story here? Like, is her point supposed to be that she is driving towards like redeeming Mira Jujau from being this apparent horrible empress into someone who is now displaced in time and space? Like, that's somehow supposed to like
feel good.
Be emotionally cathartic somehow,
especially
like, I think we've said this before, but it's like, I don't know where where this is going, and I don't mean that in a good way.
Right. It's a mystery for all the wrong reasons, and especially because we had the conversation between Lorca and Burnham in the episode before this with, like, he's like, she's not your Zherjal. And he's 100% right. This is not that person. This is a psychotic version of the woman that you knew who is not that real person. So saving her, bringing her back, I'm sure it will just be some sort of deus ex machina that will happen. Like, somehow Zherjal returning to the Prime Universe will cause something else to happen.
Mm-hmm. I mean, she's probably going to end up sacrificing herself.
Yes. You think people can learn to be better people than they are, or something like that? See, that's the problem I have. Mirror Universe people should not be so easily flippable. That's not their point. They're not just people who grew up in like a shitty situation. The whole point of the universe is that it is like the antithesis of everything that you are.
Yeah, it's like you said, I think you said last week, it's like, think about it in the reverse. If Mira Jujau showed up in the Prime Universe and said to Burnham, Michael, I need your help wiping out an entire civilization of people. And Michael's just like, okay.
Right. Yes.
You know, I don't know. I'm not, you know, I understand. I mean, I'm like, I feel like trying to flip Zherjal is something they will probably do. And it's going to make sense in and of like the episode in which it's happening.
Yeah.
But it's not going to make sense as a piece of a larger whole, if that makes sense. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I understand what you mean. It's
like a note card thing. It's like, at this point in the story, this is where all that work we've done to get Mira Jujau on the same page as Burnham is going to pay off. It's just they forgot to do the work.
I think a good example of that is Mira Stamets in this episode, where Mira Stamets gets brought back and Lorca sort of captures him and says that you're going to work for me until you are no longer useful. He spends he spends a couple scenes being useful, and then Lorca simply kills him.
Yeah, why did they even bring him back?
Why? It's like, well, and outside of that, it's like there's no nuance to that writing. You're literally just having him drag along a character and then kill him at the end. It's not like Stamets has a chance to flip something. It's not like there's a chance for Lorca like to have a little bit of Prime Universe rub off on him. It's not like Mirror Universe has a chance to be tricky or anything. It's honestly...
Stamets shows absolutely no loyalty towards anybody.
Right, yeah.
Like, what's... I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, that's it. Like, he... That Mira Stamets should be something different than the nebbish Stamets of the Prime Universe at that point. Like, there should be a reason for that character. The only reason that character has existed so far is to explain to the audience what's going on in the Spore Universe, and then to allow Lorca to, like, unlock some doors.
Yeah. And tell him what the status of his shield is when his fucking men stand 20 feet away from George Au's men and just shoot at each other. Like, you're playing laser tag. What the fuck was that scene?
That was
where they're standing in a hallway. You've got, like, 10 people on each side standing in a hallway just blandly shooting at each other. And then the shield goes down, and then people start getting killed. And then only then does George Au think to start up her fucking wall-mounted cannons. Why don't you lead with that instead of getting all your men killed?
I like the shield because it's like, oh, we've laid the perfect trap. Oh, shit, she has a shield. All right, well, if we shoot it three times, it'll go down, and then we can shoot her for real, so just keep going with it. It offered nothing. It didn't change the narrative. It just delayed.
It was such a waste of time.
Yeah.
Oh, and then, like, is the only reason they have that scene so they can emergency teleport her out of there? First of all, why didn't she do that 10 minutes ago?
Yeah.
Second of all, they don't know that she can it's her fucking ship. They don't know that she can't, that she can teleport. Like, what does even emergency transport mean? Is that just a regular transport? Why is he surprised that she could do that? To the point where he kills Stamets because he didn't tell her that she had a fucking emergency transport.
Yep. Yeah, that's...
I don't know, man.
I mean...
Again, it's like, what is that... How is that helping anything? What are we doing here? What is the point of that scene? Other than to just have a bunch of people get wasted.
I like the phaser effect. I'm trying to be positive. I just
and then at the end, when everything's they're at the door, like again, they just tell you so much fucking garbage in this and don't show you anything. They have that scene where Burnham is trying to get out of there, and George Al's like, "No, I'm gonna stay." Clearly, Lorca's men have overtaken all of my men, and most of my men who remain are now loyal to Lorca, which we just know because she's telling us that.
She's assuming it. Yeah,
I don't even know how. Where did Lorca's men come from? Were they just all in there with him?
Yes. Apparently, the ship is a prison ship as well because all of his men were being tortured in that ship for whatever
and let's,
reason.
Let's be generous, right? Let's say 25. How many men could he possibly have? You're telling me that whenever all these men of Lorca's were captured, they captured like enough to take over the Empire?
Yeah.
And put them all on the same ship?
Yeah. And they brought back the security chief who died, Landry, in the first episode. She came back for a hell of a ride, too. Yeah, it's
man,
just
man, I don't know, man.
It's really not very good. This is the first episode in a while that left me frustrated by everything that was going on. And
let's put it this way. Sorry.
No, go ahead.
If you were to watch this episode, if this were to be the first episode of Star Trek Discovery you watched, and I feel like you can apply this to any of the episodes we've watched up to this point. If this were to be the first episode that you watched, your reaction would be, oh man, this is some crazy shit happening. I bet this is probably really satisfying if you've watched everything up to this point.
Yeah.
But the trick is, it's not. Because it all exists in a vacuum somehow. And then, you know, you watch Lorca get killed and somebody gives you the, if somebody's giving you like, catching you up and like, well, he was the captain of the ship and blah, 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 and then he gets killed. Like, oh man, that must be crazy. No, because you only, in Zach Hanlon's review of this episode, which I agree with 100%, he says, We've spent multiple episodes getting to know this character, building his relationship with other leads, only to have all that erased with a shrug. No one on the Discovery seems particularly shocked by the news that their captain was lying to them this entire time. They're mildly piqued, and then they move on. And that's the entire show to me.
Yes. Yep.
That being said, I think Saru is great.
Saru is the closest thing that the story that the series has had to a arc at this point for any of the characters, because he's gone from the meek Kelpian, you know, who's unsure of taking command, to a pretty effective captain. It seems like at this point.
I honestly hope he stays captain. I think that would be great.
Yeah.
And also, again, fucking captain's log, man. You don't know how much you miss it until you have one, because.
Yeah, because Saru gives one in this one.
Yeah,
doesn't he?
Yeah. It's the first time in the whole show, I think, that they've said captain's log. They've said other log, but I don't think they've said captain's log, have they?
Because they've done Burnham, I think. But they do. I think they say acting captain. But I think that the what's funny about the captain log is that, you know, if it wasn't there, I would have been like, oh, of course, Stamets just fixes the spore drive in between episodes. Like, that makes a lot of sense. But for some reason, when you say that he does it in a captain's log, I'm like, yeah, that's believable. Like,
exactly. Yeah. And also it gives you an idea of what the hell Discovery's even doing. Because if you don't have that, it's just like, well, they've apparently just been fucking around in hyperspace for three episodes or something.
So let's
when they get back to the after all this shit comes out. And they get back to the Discovery. They've gone back, and everybody's wearing their old uniforms, and they've scrubbed off all of the Mirror Universe. So they've been spending their time doing important shit, like redecorating again.
Yeah. Yep.
I don't even know what Discovery is doing there for the last three episodes, other than
waiting around for the Emperor's
unencrypting shit between episodes.
Yep. Yeah, it's true. I mean, it's true. They've been working on the spore thing, right? I guess that's supposed to be what they're doing over there. They're working on the Stamets, discovering the state of the spore network and everything like that.
It's crazy to me that you have this big reveal where you turn your captain into this villain who's trying to overthrow the Empire. And up to this point, you've built up the namesake ship of your show as this massive weapon that could change the tide of a war. And then when it comes to pull the trigger on that change, that weapon is not even part of the plan in any way whatsoever.
Yeah.
Unless I'm missing something, but it seems you said the same thing, so it seems like that isn't the case. But like, there's no, even when he's trying to take over the ship, there's no point. Is he like, I need to get the Discovery?
He's negotiating with Burnham. Burnham's like, let my ship and crew go, and he's like, yeah, okay,
yeah,
fine, stay with me.
I don't. What's going? What are we doing?
Let's talk about we've beaten that to
but
death.
Saru is good.
Tilly's a minor version of Saru. I think the Tilly is also somewhat satisfying of an arc in this entire thing. You don't have to go crazy with it. I don't need huge dedicated amounts of time built around this, but you have to do a little bit of something.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, our general opinion is just that the plotting there is horrifically weak, and this show is all about the plot points that it needs to get to, and it does not care whatsoever about its characters. And if your argument with me is that the show has had some character stuff, I really need to see some evidence. It's easy to say that. I don't think it's really honestly very true. I think that the show, what's funny to me is like all the retweets that Discovery does every Sunday, a lot of them were, greatest episode of Star Trek ever, which is absurd on its face. And
boy,
even if it was a great episode, it's absurd to say something like that so soon. But I think that everyone is just very like, you never know where it's coming from. And it's just the trouble is of how it, never before has an episode felt so un-Star Trek-y to me. And I know that we started this series with me saying like, yeah, it's time for Trek to change some things and everything. But this is not how Star Trek works on a lot of levels. Like, you know, you can change the format. DS9, look back at DS9. DS9 is Star Trek without the exploration, which is a huge departure for that, right? That's a big change for the series to go from that point to that point. It still feels like a Star Trek show. And not just because it was filmed in the 90s, but it's like it has the way that it tells those stories is a very Star Trek-y thing. This is totally bizarre. And I think Zach said in his review, just imagine if you took Star Trek away from this, like you would just think the show is just a below average generic sci-fi television show.
Yeah. And to kind of, and to another thing he says that kind of goes along with what you're saying is he has a whole paragraph where he says, you know, what the hell is Discovery about? You've got Star Trek, the original, which is a five-year mission to explore the universe. Next Generation is the same thing, but without the limit. Deep Space Nine is what happens if you stay in one place. Voyager is what happens if you get lost. Enterprise is what happens if you go back to where it all began. And Discovery is what happens when a protagonist betrays her captain and inadvertently helps start a war with the Klingons and gets sentenced to life imprisonment, only to get saved by a captain who turns out to be a guy from another universe. And also, her boyfriend is a secret Klingon, and right, that war is still going on in Spores.
Captain, there's no response from the Federation to our signal. Not even an automated one.
What does that mean?
War map on screen, Captain.
If the map is to be believed, it appears the Klingons have won the war.
That's it. I said it on Twitter. One of the Star Trek things that asked people to vote for what they think the rating was, and I gave it a D, saying that this is it's just the show confusing serialization for narrative. Like, there's a distinction between those two things.
Yeah,
and this is the peak show doing that. Let's talk about where the show ends up at this point. We're back 9 months in the future. The Klingons are winning the war. What do we have left to do here?
Well, the Admiral comes back apparently next week for some reason, even though
Sarek returns.
Oh, God, the storytelling in this show is so bad. Sarek returns. I don't know. I mean, honestly, I'm still not convinced they don't end up back at the Battle of the Binary Stars. Like, I'm just trying to think, like, thematically and structurally, unless the rest of the show is going to be take place 9 months into the future where the Klingons have won the war, the point of the story is still going to be to make the Klingons not win the war.
Yes.
Right?
They can't win this war.
Yeah, unless they're just shit canning all of continuity, which, yeah, who knows, they might. So at some point, they have to reset things. And I don't know how you reset things without going back to the Battle of the Binary Stars and just averting the confrontation altogether.
I see no way besides wiping the slate clean how you can resolve the war in two episodes or whatever that we have left.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, even if, let's say they don't and they stick with this timeline where the war is going.
War storyline for another season. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah. Like, to what end? Again, the only end is that it has to not be the case.
Yep.
And, you know, I feel like it has the same... how do I put this? Sticking with the timeline where the Klingons have won the war is the same to me as sticking with the mirror universe. The reason that you go into that timeline or that reality in the first place is in order to reflect what's happening in the prime timeline.
Yeah.
And the story you've set up is that there is a war going on between the Klingons and the Federation. And this is the Ghost of Christmas Future kind of look where it's like, well, what happens if the Klingons win? But there's only so much you can do in there before you have to kind of wake up on Christmas morning, you know what I mean?
Yep.
So I don't know. I don't see what you would do. You know, if you're gonna, why jump to the future and stay in the future, and you know all the stories that you could maybe tell about being in the this Klingon One future, when you have plenty of stories you could tell about the actual war that you set up 15 episodes ago.
Yes.
I don't know. I mean, again, I'm more than welcome. I'm willing to be open that in two episodes we come back and I go, man, I misjudged the show big time. But
it's getting harder to say that as the further we move along.
True.
I mean,
But Saru is great.
The ship looks great. But, you know, and I'm willing to say that the second season of this show will be many times better than this season.
Yeah.
Something fundamentally went wrong during production of this season. Like, they... Either the scripts had to be rewritten, the Brian Fuller exodus caused some kind of chaos, the decision to not be an anthology, maybe if they started as a an anthology and they moved to a not anthology, caused them to really lose track of the story, and they had to just rewrite everything to get people back to where they needed to be.
Mm-hmm.
It's just... the show doesn't feel like it's written by Star Trek fans on some level. It's like a...
Yeah, I don't know.
Do you disagree with that?
Well, I don't disagree with it, but I don't necessarily think that it's a prerequisite. I mean,
no, I don't think it's important, but I think that it's a the reason I say that is because it's written by, it seems like the writing staff is confusing serialization for story in the same way that they're confusing the tropes of Star Trek for Star Trek.
Yeah.
It's like it's just a, there's nothing underneath any of the shine to it.
Right. It's the, you know, it's the storytelling equivalent of, ooh, isn't it cool that he has a Gorn head in his office?
Right. Yeah.
What could that mean? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see where it ends up. But I guess that's it. We have the
Remember in the third episode where everyone was saying like, "Oh, the first two episodes were just a big prologue. This is where the show actually starts."
Yeah.
I feel like they do that every like five or six episodes. Like the same thing happened at this mid-season break where it's like, oh, okay. All right. Well, now that they're in the Mirror Universe, okay, now it's going to, this is the jump where it's really going to start going.
Yeah.
And then now it's like, oh, well, okay. I mean, now they're 9 months into the future. Now this is really where it starts going. So all that stuff was just a prologue.
And that's why that
Title is accurate. It's, you know, not good, but it's accurate.
You could easily, because of what we said about none of the narrative really amounting to anything, you could easily give this to exposition. And that's another thing about it. It's like there's no reason to see this stuff because you could easily have this explained through a couple character dialogue scenes.
What are the chances the next episode starts with Burnham giving a recap of everything, like a voiceover recap
of the entire season so far?
Yeah, I'm dead serious. Like, what's the chances? Excuse me. What are the chances it starts with Burnham saying, like, you know, I started out off this mission, I inadvertently started this war, and then the captain who put his faith in me turned out to be a villainous whatever, and now we're here 9 months into after the end of the war that I started. And, you know, that, like, that kind of thing. And it's like, yeah, you could start your whole fucking series that way.
Yeah.
And you don't miss anything. We haven't missed anything if you do that, because nothing we've seen up to this point matters.
The next episode is called The War Without the War Within.
Sure.
Sounds like it's kind of Ash Tyler-y, but I guess we'll have to see.
Yeah, probably.
Up until that point. Anyway, I think we're done talking about this one. We'll be here with the next week with whatever I just said was the name of the episode, The War Without the War Within. There's only two episodes left. Will You Take My Hand is the very last episode of season one. Thank you guys very much for listening. Apologies if we sounded too negative, but this is one of my least favorite episodes that we've seen so far, which is all the more bizarre because of how a lot of stuff happens in this one.
Also, sorry, we didn't even touch on the spore drive thing. That wrapped up pretty quickly. Like, wasn't the whole thing, the last episode was like, oh, the spore drive is dying and we might not be able to jump or some shit like that. And then this one's like, no, it's fine. We just have to outrun the blast of this massive ship and we'll be fine.
And I guess that fixed it because that ship was draining the network or something. I guess that's the logic there, where destroying the Admiral's, the Karen, will fix everything.
You know what's I'm interested in, though, is what happens to the Discovery when it shows, when the Mirror Universe Discovery ends up back in the Mirror Universe. They're gonna be really confused.
I'm shocked we never saw any of that. If they switched places, which I'm assuming is what happened, it's shocking that we never saw what the Mirror Discovery was up to. We'll probably hear about it.
I'm hoping that we come. If anything, at the very least, I would love to hear that when they come back, some of the exposition we get about what happened in the 9 months they were gone is that the Discovery won the war for the Klingons or some shit like that.
Yes, it like caused havoc behind the lines or something. Yeah. Could be, right? That could have happened.
That's... Please. Just make one interesting storytelling decision. Something that has consequences that actually mean something on a larger scale, please.
Thank you very much for listening. Hope you enjoyed the content. All the media links, social media links, will be in the video description or the podcast blurb. You can go there. You can go to patreon.com/thepenskyfile if you want to support the show. A couple dollars a month, you get you extra content. I'm talking about Face Off this month, the Nick Cage, John Travolta movie.
That's the one when the Klingons capture John Travolta and turn him into the firebrand. The torchbearer, Nicolas Cage.
Anyway, thank you very much. Let me know what you guys thought about this episode. I'll be very interested. I don't think anyone's changing at this point. It's kind of like voting patterns in the U.S. at this point. Like, once you're voting for somebody, you're voting for them, and I don't think anyone can really change their mind about anything. It makes me wonder what people change their mind about. Maybe I'm wrong, and I can't change my mind, but I'm feeling very unsatisfied by Discovery Season 1. Clay, thank you very much for coming on.
Yeah.
Anything to say before we sign off?
My book Redline comes out this Wednesday on the 31st. If you happen to be by a comic book store or a bookstore and you feel like picking one up, I'd be much obliged.
Guys, thank you very much. Hope you enjoyed it. We'll be back with the DS9 episode on Thursday, and then we'll be back with the penultimate Star Trek Discovery episode next Monday. Thank you very much for listening. Let me know your thoughts. See you later.